many of my colleagues. I'm actually presenting for another ICF employee. Shawnee Taylor is our staff member who is leading this initiative. So she is actually in grad school, back in grad school, and now is unfortunately not a time that she could get away. But I thank you for letting me come today. In 2011, the National Cancer Institute smokefree.gov program wanted to find another way to do outreach and engagement. We realized with the massive growth and penetration of text messaging and cell phones that in addition to web-based resources and app-based, we wanted something that could reach any population. And so we began the smoke-free text program. As you can see, the penetration of mobile consumers is continuing to grow and is significant. And this isn't just within the United States, but globally. We've been able to take the smoke-free text program and customize it for different populations, a smoke-free mill, smoke-free vet, smoke-free mom, and then actually using it, adapting for different countries, including we're looking at now Mexico, Guatemala, Brazil, South Africa, and a couple of other that are actually in the play, potentially India, and actually doing some baseline evaluations in China as well. So the program itself is designed to engage someone about 2 weeks before they quit, although you can actually sign up as soon as the day of quitting. And it's an 8-week program. You start with 2 weeks of warming and then 6 weeks of follow-up messaging. All of this is designed to meet you where you are in your quit experience and journey so that the messaging actually changes day-to-day, depending on how far you are from quitting. And then there are periodic check-ins. This is all self-reported, so any of the data that we're looking at now is actually just program evaluation. We are in the process of actually conducting a controlled trial to do true evaluation, and we're hoping to have data on that in the next couple of months. So we do collect some baseline demographic data, although everything is, of course, blinded. We are working with a couple of data partners, academic data partners, to do more control trials where they're actually doing it as an intervention in medical settings. So often as people are coming in through emergency rooms or through with smoke-free mom, through prenatal care, so that we're actually getting a little more detailed data with those specific trials. We currently have around 40,000 active subscribers, and we've had almost 90,000 historically. The subscriber base tends to be, as you'll see actually in just a minute, one of the things that we were struggling with, and smoke-free text launched in 2011, it was based on an existing behavioral profile, and one of the things that we were concerned with was how do we actually do something with this, aside from looking at it and knowing it'll work, and we're looking at clinical trials, and we're going to get very valid data, but how can we make things happen a little more quickly? And then we started getting into the data. We have almost 1 million data points. We're like, this is great, but what do we do with it? How do we make it interesting and accessible? And then we started prioritizing, let's do a visualization. Let's see what it looks like and see if it makes any immediate impact. The challenge that we had was, and as you can imagine, as anyone who's worked with data and has fun with data, there are more rabbit holes than you can ask for. Once you start getting in, well, we could do this, and we could do that, and we can do this. And we actually went down, we had a couple of hundred different potential visualizations. And we said, okay, if we do a couple of hundred visualizations, it's interesting and fun, but we'll never use it. How do we make it actionable? So then we actually started tying that we had to have each measure that we were going to visualize had to be able to inform and change the program. And this is actually a model that we've actually started to incorporate into different visualizations, especially around broad-based marketing. So when you have just so much performance data, historical data, marketing data, how do you take it and simplify it so that you actually have something that you can act on? And as we create these, and we use these, and I unfortunately don't have pictures of it because they're very long Excel spreadsheets and would not present well, but thinking of it in terms of what can I do to make this actionable? What is the step that it's going to take? And then how am I going to use it? So actually starting at that most basic level of defining who your population is. Do I understand them well enough to tailor my program so that it will be useful to them? And then actually using low-fidelity visualizations. So running data in and using programs, we largely use Tableau for these visualizations. So instead of creating a complex ETL and doing data validation on it, really just looking at running data in and saying, does this make sense visually? Am I seeing anything different? And then using that those insights to create some very complex wireframes so that we actually are building out how do these pieces line up, how do they stack up so that the whole story is presented. And what we found when we actually started building these out, and we're still in the process of building them, is that we had to go back and have our data scientists come in and validate, are these findings in line with what we're seeing through our research studies? Are they in line with seeing what we're seeing through general population studies? And we actually found that a couple of times the visualizations weren't right. So having that validation check, not just and often relying on the gut check to say, hey, is this right, but bringing back in and going through the data again to find out where are the differences, how are we interpreting this potentially not quite right, how are we not coding it right, but to really make it very specific and to go down and look at how we're actually running the algorithms so the visualizations make sense. So at a most basic level, we started with gender, understanding our population. Now, so what's interesting here is that you'll see we have a 60% female population and 40% male, and we have some unknowns. We obviously made some of the reporting optional. Men and women typically quit at comparable rates. So this was something that was interesting to us because we didn't run campaigns targeted toward women. We ran our campaigns very intentionally to an open population. So it's telling us that women are going to be more inclined to use this type of mechanism to support their quit attempts. What's also important to note is that a lot of what we're doing here is driving the further research that we're going to do. So are there further studies that we need to do to understand why text messaging will work for certain populations versus others? Interestingly, age fits almost perfectly with what we see with the general, with the ages at which people attempt to quit. So it was nice to see that we had a validation that was in line with the published research and one that was very different. We're also seeing that smoke-free text, it mirrors the national smoking patterns. So first, if you look at the U.S. smoking prevalence by state, and we like to call it the tobacco belt, the general southeast through Texas, where you have very high prevalence, little reduced control, and we do see just higher rates of smoking. We compared that to the smoke-free gov visits. So smoke-free is actually a very complex system. It has four or five different websites. I think we're up to seven or eight text libraries and six or seven apps, so in addition to all social media presences. And we're working on getting those to be combined and integrated, but you'll see it is nice that we do see some parallels in terms of the use within the smoking belt and then California. California having fairly strict and the most restrictive tobacco control laws in terms of where you can smoke, there's a higher need for smoking cessation support. So you see that connection there. And we also, fortunately, have some partners in California that do promote smokefree.gov and the text program. It's nice to see that the smoke-free text participation by state very much aligns to that southeast and then California, and again in Alaska. And that is actually coming, we found, from Alaska through some public awareness and outreach efforts that were done through the public health groups. So it's nice to see those pickups happening. Now, to get into a little bit more of the fun side of it, one of the things that we were looking at was how does this work? And one of the questions we have is we're measuring mood. And I love this visualization because we'll see as someone starts, the day two is they've started the program. This is 2 days after they've quit. And everyone's pretty much okay. They're not bad. No one's really good. Or they're about as equally good as they are bad. And as the program progresses, you see that good uptick. So it's nice to know there's almost an instant validation here that not only are people quitting, and we're seeing this among populations that participated throughout the program, but they're seeing a personal improvement in their mood. This was something that when we tried to go through data, the data itself in tables, it just made no sense. So but putting up a visualization made it so quick and easy to see that corresponding downward shift in the okays. So what's also interesting here is that our bads really didn't change very much. So you're going to have a population, as we know, with quit attempts that are going to need repeat efforts. So we're really striking to hit those people and also helps us as we're looking at the messaging and the outreach for the populations we really want to hit when we're doing the outreach and the timing and those specific groups. And then we also were finding out that the quit rates were actually based on time of day for effort. So one of the things that was interesting is when is the best time for someone to quit? When are they most serious about it? And it was between noon and 6 p.m. This is actually time adjusted. It was a little bit of a surprise because our majority signups are actually later in the day. We see people between 6 p.m. and midnight really starting to participate. And at the same time, we see more more activity in social media. But the efficacy is really what we were looking for. So then that actually informs when we're promoting. So when are the times that we want to push out messages about smoke-free text? Because we want to capture people, we want to make the program available to them at all times, but really pushing and encouraging them to join at a time when they're going to have the greatest likelihood of success. We also see, and this is actually a comparable graph in the time of day for social media, and you'll see comparable posts. And a lot of what these back and forth, what we're able to do is to see when the different timing of people were participating, both based on time of day, and that's which this one captures nicely, as well as when the actual specific time. And again, we use this for program optimization to combine when we're putting messaging out on social media that pushes people to the text messaging program, but likewise, when we're pushing text messaging and reminders within this text program that drive people to social media and the importance of social support. So, how are we using it largely? Again, for the time of day and optimization, as we're structuring it around campaigns, looking at when are there specific messages, and then we're in the process now of developing some logic around predictive analytics. So actually getting tailoring down to an individual person of when are they most responsive, what time of day are they participating into the program, so that makes the most sense that we can actually push messages out to them when they're going to most likely to need it. So if we're seeing times when their mood may be a negative, that we may push a support message out voluntarily to them at that time of day. So really looking at how can we tailor this program in an automated way so that as it scales larger, it can still have almost a personal touch. There's so many people who can't access either through resources or where they live smoking cessation support, that how do we make this a personalized coach, and predictive analytics through visualization is one of the key pieces. And then likewise, can we better integrate all of these smoke-free properties to get a more unified program so that whether they're coming through text, online, app, that they're actually getting the messaging is reinforcing based on when they need it and the best way to do kind of effect and support. So there might be something that's more tip-oriented versus motivation-oriented based on the time of day and what we're seeing, the feedback based on use. And then, actually, questions will be at the end.